alumni, residents, all of you. My name is Huggy Bear, and I am a blessed and grateful recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 25th, 2015. And for some of you that are just coming in, that may seem like a long time. But over the course of tonight, I'm going to have an opportunity to maybe share with you a little bit what got me to 2 years coming up next week. You know, I say that I'm an alcoholic, but first and foremost, I want you to know that I am a child of God, and I believe we all are. And I like to keep that first and foremost because I hear so many people get bogged down into the negative aspects of what we are as alcoholics. This disease, I was a piece of shit, I was a liar, I was a thief, I was a crook. I believe that at the core of us, there's a seed of goodness that brings us here. I don't even look at it as a disease. I look at it as a spiritual gift. Because I don't know about you guys, I wasn't just addicted to alcohol and heroin and cocaine and all that other shit that I was into. I was addicted to more. Anybody can relate to that? Yeah. Being addicted to more? Yeah. And you know what? A part of being addicted to more is, I was addicted to more alcohol. Yeah, sure. I was addicted to more heroin. I was addicted to more meth. I was addicted to more pain. I was addicted to more suffering. I was addicted to more dysfunctional relationships. But you know what else that I'm addicted to as a part of this gift that we call a disease? I'm also addicted to more love. When I love, I love. I don't know about you, but when I love, I love. I'm addicted to more joy. When I have my joy, I've got joy. I don't know about any of you guys, you can relate to that. But I got some joy when I have joy. And I am also addicted to being a better person. I'm addicted to feeling good. How many of y'all have started the movie Monsters Ball with Halle Berry and Billy Bob Thornton? Remember that part of the movie where she's just like, I just want to feel good. I just want to feel good. I just want to feel good. That's me. I just want to feel good. You know why I'm sober today? Because I just want to feel good. You know why I quit doping and quit drinking and quit being addicted to all that negative shit? Because it didn't feel good. I want to feel good. If alcohol and drugs could still make me feel good, you would not see my black ass up here. I'll be out there and I'll be out. Yeah, know that. Because I want to feel good. Somewhere along the line, somewhere in the course of these 2 years, I had a chance to do the steps, and it showed me how I could feel good. If you're new, and you're struggling, and you're coming in here, and you don't know if this is right for you, you don't even know if you really want to stay sober, just ask yourself this: am I full in the power of the old shit, and do I want to feel good? Because if you want to feel good, Lord knows we got something for you that will help you feel good, because we're going to get to the heart of why you don't feel good, and we're going to help you heal that. That's what it's special for. That's what it's all about, having a spiritual awakening so you can feel good. You know, I started off my journey like a lot of you, maybe. I didn't have the healthiest childhood. I had a mother who got pregnant at 16 years old. She had me at 17. And she just took off. She was like, I can't do this. Can't do the kid thing. She left. Left me with relatives. My relatives passed me around. Aunts, grandmother, another aunt. Along the time when I was being passed around relatives, I got molested. I had some sexual transgressions against me as a child. And it wasn't even like somebody had to beat my ass and rape me. You know what? I'm such a people pleaser. And as an alcoholic, I also want to fit in somewhere else. All this person had to do was tell me I'd be cool if he let me fuck him. If I let him fuck me. You'd be in a club. Excuse my language, but this is my shit. This is real. He said, I could be in the club. There's this club of kids. Wasn't even like a relative, nothing like that. There's a club of kids in my neighborhood. And these kids were looked up to. They had a clubhouse, they had all this kind of stuff. And he says, I'm walking by one day. He says, hey, man, what's up? Come over here. You want to be in this club, man? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, 5 years old, man. 5 years old. Like 6 years old at most. I'm like, yeah, I want to be in the club. Well, you got to do some stuff with me. And that's how it started. And I was so ashamed of myself. I went home, and I didn't tell anybody anything. I sat down, went to the upstairs, I watched TV like it was any other day, and I bottled that up, and I carried that with me all throughout my drinking, all throughout my life. Luckily, these steps have been helping me to deal with that. When I was also young, my mother, she finally came back for me. She had a stepfather, a husband with her, my stepfather. And he wasn't too keen on having me around as a stepchild. One of the things that he decided to do to remedy this situation was to keep me locked up in my room. Throughout the entire summer of when I was 10 years old, and I'm old as hell, this is like the summer of 1979. I was locked in my room all freaking summer. I got to come out to eat. I got to come out to use the bathroom. And it was back to the room. The family would go out, have dinner. I'd go out, do whatever they wanted to do. And I stayed in that room. And I have never in my life felt such loneliness. Such desperation. Such pain. And such despair. As that 10-year-old little boy locked in his room who only wanted his mommy to love him. That's all I wanted. And I was in that room. I took that and I buried that too. I took that and I hid that too. So, by the time I'm a teenager and I discovered drinking and smoking weed, it was a godsend. It was a blessing, because if you have been living with the kind of pain that I had, with the kind of anguish that I had, all that stuff bogged down inside of me, and for the first time to feel okay, oh man, I thank God I found drugs and alcohol when I did. You're not going to hear that in every meeting. Not every speaker's going to tell you that, but I'm going to tell you right now, I thank God that I found drugs and alcohol, because if I did not, I would have killed myself a long, long time ago because I could not stand suffering anymore. Remember what I said at the beginning? I just want to feel good. Alcohol and drugs help me feel good, and it works for a very, very long time. A very long time. I'm not going to go into my war story. The only reason I told you about my childhood because I just wanted to be clear that no stone was left unturned. If there's anybody in any one of these seats tonight that have been through some childhood shit, that have been through some trauma, that have been through some pain, and they're wondering, am I too broken to get this? Am I too broken to be sober? Am I too broken to feel okay in my life again? I had to share that with you to let you know that I'm like you. I too was broken. I too have been living as though I'm broken. And I found a solution today. Like I said, the drugs and alcohol, they worked for a very long time. I did have a career with methamphetamines. I had a career where alcohol and pot were always there. I woke up, I got high every day. I was never out of pot. I never out of anything else. I was never out of my weed. I had my weed every day. I was steady smoking. That was always there, but I had some time with meth, crystal meth, started shooting that up. Had some time with cocaine, started shooting that up. And then, man, listen, I thought it couldn't get any better, man. Somebody said, hey, man, you want to try some of this heroin? I'm like, shit. Does it make you feel good? He's like, oh, man, you don't even know. I was just straight, sign me up for that shit right there. And I did that heroin. And that was a very strange thing because somewhere as I was accepting that heroin that day on the Upper West Side of Manhattan in New York City, there was like this small voice in my head that was like, if you do this shit right here, nothing will be the same again. Because I've been going on for years, drinking and smoking weed and doing a little cocaine and stuff. Also, man, you know, I was a functioning addict, functioning alcoholic. But man, when that dope gets a hold of your ass, boy, woo, I'm doing really good. Really, really good. All that functioning was out the window, man. That was gone. No more functioning. And so that little small voice said, everything will change. You will either die or you will get straight, because this will take you to a point to where you cannot stand it. And you know what? I didn't mind dying, and part of me thought I could get straight one day, so why the hell not? I did that heroin, and I loved it. My favorite drug of all time. It took me to dark places. I've done some dark shit. I don't know if any of you guys can relate to this. I'm not even particularly gay, but I did some gay ass shit to give me some more dope.
Yeah, I did.
And I share that with you today because this is the stuff that was in my shame, stuff on my fifth step that I swear to God I would never tell anybody. I'm straight, I never did any gay. Look at that gay shit on my face. No, man. Yeah. If it helped me get more dope, I did it. So there was this one time I ran across this cat. He was a paraplegic in a wheelchair, man. This cat told me to give him a hand job for some dope, man. I didn't even know that if you're a paraplegic, you can't get a hard on. I sat there working on this cat for so long, thinking this was going to give me some dope. Man, I jacked him off for like 2 hours. At the pinnacle of my heroin usage, I was at the end. I was tired of things going on the way they were, and I didn't know how they would change. Every day was the same old shit. Groundhog's Day, hustling to get more dough. Waking up sick, wondering how I'm going to get more. If I don't get more today, it's just the suffering of laying in that bed and sweating and being dope sick and having to drag my ass out that bed just so I could try to get some courage up so I could do some other kind of new hustle, trying to get some new dough just so I could be okay. Every day. All the time. So glad I don't have to do that today. Thank God I don't have to do that today. But at the end there, near the end of my heroin career, I knew that I could shoot up like 3 dime bags in one shot. And this is heroin from New York City. So we just get little dime bags and little wax paper things, you know. I don't know how you guys do it out here, thank God, but that's how we did it back in New York. And I knew that I could have 3 bags and that would take me right to the edge of as high as I ever wanted to be. I was not out for a good long time. I would feel good. And I knew that was as much as I could do. But this one day, I thought to myself, what if I did 4 bags? I was strong enough. I was desperate enough. And I didn't want to live enough. And I decided to do 4 bags. The whole time I'm loading up my spoon and heating it up and cooking it, I'm sitting there shaking because I know I'm about to fuck up bad. This is about to get bad up in here. Fucking graphic. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I'm gonna do this 4-bag shot. And I remember as I plunged it into my vein, there was this feeling of, oh shit. I don't know if anybody's ever OD, but man, you get that, you can't pull it out. It's already in there. It's like, oh shit. And you know what it felt like? I broke it. Whatever it is, that's me, I broke it. You ever like been messing around in your mom's house and you break the vase or put some peanut butter in the VCR or some shit and you know you're in trouble because you broke it? Imagine that times 100. I broke it. I broke everything it. Whatever I was, I broke it. It was done. Broke it. Ooh. You in trouble. You done broke it. And I sat there. After I thought, oh shit. there was like a silence, like a darkness. Next thing I know, I'm about a foot below the ceiling of my little shitty apartment on the upper west side of Manhattan. And I'm looking down on my body, laying on the bed. Same shit was on TV, SportsCenter. That's why I watched ESPN around the clock, so of course that was on. Got a needle in my hand, and I'm laying there. And I'm not in there anymore. I'm over here now, and there's my body. A little disoriented. And this is crazy. I thought to myself, oh my God, I can't believe I went out like this. Is this dead? Is this really dead? Am I dead up in here? Did I really just die up in here? Yeah, I did. And I thought to myself, I thought I had so much potential. I thought I was going to do so much with my life. You know, even all through all the tough times and all the pain and all the suffering, I thought that one day God was going to pull me up and I was going to be okay one day. And I was dead. Just another nigga dead with a needle in his hand. I was a statistic. Another junkie dead. And then right after that thought, I looked around my apartment from the ceiling, and it was a mess. This was before the internet, so there was like porno mags everywhere, bottles of the 40s, you know, just empty bottles. The bathroom was down the hall, so some of the bottles had piss in them. It was a mess. Caps, orange caps everywhere, needles everywhere. And you know what I thought to myself as I'm dead? You know, I thought, man, I wish I would have cleaned up the right time. It would have been nice to tidy up just a little bit. So when they come here 2 weeks from now, find my beaten ass body, they won't think I'm such a pig. I don't mind if they know that the OD died, but I wish I would have cleaned up. Hey, that's some silly shit. Right after I had that thought, that silly thought, I was whisked away. I went down this tunnel. And this right now, I'm tripping. I don't know what's going on. I've heard stories about tunnels before, and I'm dead, so this is okay, that's cool. There's a tunnel, all right? And I go by and I see, not so much my life flash before my eyes, I just see key important moments in my life. Decisions that I made, people that I touched. And then at the end of the tunnel, I find myself in silence and space. There were those beautiful, just grandiose images. Imagine if you would, like the images from the Hubble telescope. Just creation itself was expanding before me. And it was amazing. And in this amazing place, there was a still small voice, not even a voice, a feeling, a sensation, a knowing that communicated to me. This is what you're feeling right now is love. This is the epitome of love. Nothing that you've ever done, nothing that you will ever do, nothing that you even think you've done will ever change what you are. Because let me tell you about this love, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine the love as an ocean. Okay? And I'm a drop of water in that ocean of love. Everything that was that ocean was encompassed in my drop of water. Everything that was my drop of water was the very essence of this ocean that I have come to know being love. This is my God. This was my home. This was my creator. And I didn't want to go anywhere else. Because you know what? I'd rather stay there than going back to the needles, going back to the desperation, going back to the hustling, going back to the lying, the cheating, the stealing. Why? I was home. Just when I was starting to get comfortable, the same voice says, you got to come back now. You have so much more work to do. You're not even done. All that, but, nah, no, but, man, you gotta go, You're gonna have to go. So many more people you need to touch. So many more important things you need to do. So many things you have to feel. I am living through you. And I have a lot more living to do through you. And so I was back down the tunnel, back in my body. And I woke up, oh my God. And here's the thing. I remember thinking and knowing that I had something to do. But I couldn't remember what it was for the life of me. Because this thing told me I had to come back because I have something to do. I have something to do. So I'm like, yeah, by the way, I'm like really high. I just shot 4 bags of dope. And I'm like, I'm high. I'm getting up, walking around my apartment. I can't figure out what I'm supposed to do. I'm like opening up closets. I'm looking under drawers. I'm like looking under the bed. What am I going to do? I got to find something. What's going on? I have something to do. What is that? I don't get it. And then finally, I open up the fridge, and there was no beer in there, and I realized what I had to do. I had to go back to the bodega and get some more beer because the game was not there. The reason I think that my higher power took away the memory of that experience from me, I didn't remember that until years later. While I was doing some exercises with meditation called rebirthing, and I was able to remember my near-death experience. The reason I could not remember immediately is because my higher power knew me. If I had known that death was love, an ocean of love, and I'm like walking on top in here, just loving and feeling all the bliss and the joy and the happiness in the world, I would have killed myself immediately to get back in that place. I would have done 5 bags, 6 bags, 7 bags, anything it would have taken to get back to that place. So I could not remember my experience until I was, I guess you say, just more willing to live. Not until later on in my life, I was willing to live. When my higher power knew that killing myself was no longer an option, was I shown and able to remember the experience that I had in that ocean of love with a needle in my hand, my dead body on the side of the bed. I talked about this experience because I want to convey what I learned there and what I've been learning along my life and in these steps. It took me a long time to get sober. I didn't even try to start getting sober until that experience, but I went to 7 rehabs right here, this place, these sacred grounds upon which we find ourselves. This is my 7th rehab. 7. But I kept coming back. I kept coming back. I had 4 years sober at one point, and I would get like a few months here and there, but I kept coming back. I had all these things where like, okay, cool, I quit the heroin. But I'm still gonna smoke my weed and drink, you know. I'll be sober for a few months, but I'm gonna do that. I can do that safely. Nah. Okay, cool. I'll quit the cocaine. But I'm still gonna be able to drink and smoke weed one day, right? Hey, come on, I'm human, right? Come on, you're funny, right? Go back out again. It wasn't until alcohol took me to my knees, and I needed that. I drank myself into oblivion before I showed up in these rooms, before I showed up at this rehab. I was at freaking Shoal Creek at a psych ward in a detox unit, hallucinating, seeing shit, and I was drinking like 2 gallons of wine a day. I couldn't hold down any food. It took me 10 days to be able to hold down food. You know how they talk about alcohol being the most dangerous drug to detox off of? And all the nurses and the detox are all worried about the alcoholics and the junkies are like, oh, you're going to be fine, junkie. I got to focus on the alcoholic. You might die. When you are detoxing like that, you might die. And I was that far off. And I'm so grateful. Because now I know, okay, I'm not an alcoholic. Yes. Now, let's begin. What can we do now? No more wishing and fantasizing about drinking and smoking weed one day. Yes, I got the full Monty. With alcohol. And so I take that in here. And this place changed my life. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know what your attitude is if you're in here as a resident. I was so ready for this. I came in here, I was on fire. Man, I was going to get me some sobriety. And if you want to come along, I'll take you along with me. Everybody up in this joint. We used to have like 50 guys back in here at that time. And we were on fire because I was on fire. Not that I was on fire. Remember, to me, everybody was on fire because I was on fire. Even if you weren't on fire, I'm like, that's cool. They were on fire. You're on fire. And I took that same fire and I showed up to the lectures. I did what my counselor said. I did the work. I did the life story. I shared that. I did all the things. I did musical journey 3 freaking times. I was hungry. I was hungry to get better just as I was hungry to get some more dope. and I didn't have the daggone paraplegic to begin with. Thank God. I probably would have. I'm trying to feel. Yes, Sean, get them off. Ah, okay, we're getting the song. Man, my life today is so amazing. I live in a sober house. I'm part of Oxford House. I've been living in that sober house since I got out of this treatment center. The camaraderie and the brotherhood that I have in that sober house has been instrumental in helping me stay sober. I was only 6 months sober when my mom died. And we were estranged. We had a lot of history. And I'll be honest with you, my mother was dysfunctional in a lot of ways. She drank herself to death, and I have removed myself from her life for the most part. But through this program, I was able to spend time with her before she died, and forgive her, and make an amends to her before she died. And even more importantly, when she died, I stayed sober. Kyle will tell you, I used to come in the rooms talking about my mom just died, and I was broken up. But I came into a room and I talked about it. I see that so that you know that you can stay sober through anything. Well, your girlfriend left you that just met in rehab? You just met her in rehab? You got a use now? Nah, you can stay sober through anything.
Ah, oh, man, I lost my job, son.
Nah, stay sober through anything. Anything, because I guarantee you, it does get better, and you will get to feel good if you do. I got myself a sponsor, and I started working these steps, and I'll be honest with you, I wasn't a big AA guy. Like, I will tell you, in the early days, man, I'd barely come around. She'd see me, like, once a month, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm here, I'm cool, yeah, what's up? Cool, yeah, I see you too, cool. But I had a sponsor who finally took me through the steps. And that, to be honest with you, it was like a year into my sobriety. I waited a long time. And I kept digging around trying to find different sponsors. And, you know, I was going through sponsors like girlfriends, man. I was like, I couldn't sit with them. I couldn't sit with them. But, man, I finally found a guy who connected with me. And where I could feel like we had something we could share. And something that we could bond over. And I could trust him. You know, people say, just find a sponsor or anything, whether you trust them or not. Cool, if you can do that, that's awesome. I haven't felt good about the guy I was working with. Because, you know, I had a tongue about a hand job and getting molested. I want to make sure this guy was going to be freaking on point with me, and I could feel secure talking to him about that kind of stuff. And so I did, I got a sponsor that I could finally tell everything to. Everything to. Everything to. If you can't tell your sponsor everything, you maybe don't have the right sponsor. Because you got to be able to tell somebody something. Or maybe you got the right sponsor. Get a clergyman. Get a cab. Get a freaking Uber. Tell somebody everything. I'm an Uber driver. I'll hear this shit. That's what I do. Tell somebody everything. These steps are in an order for a particular reason. It is a form of psychological reprogramming and spiritual reprogramming. The very essence and the reason these steps are what they are is because of one simple thing: to facilitate and to assist you in having a spiritual awakening. Step 12, as a result of these steps and having to have a spiritual awakening, we try to take this message to alcoholics and to share this message. I'm fucking that up, but you know what I'm talking about. Something like that. As a result of a spiritual awakening, whenever I take on new guys to sponsor, they'll come up to me, they're all bedraggled and down and stuff, and I'll say, yo, man, lift your chin up, man. Because if you were willing to work with me, and if you're willing to do what I suggest, we're not just going to put the plug in a jug, or put the cap on the needle, or put down the pipe. We are going to take this to the next level. Are you ready to have a next level kind of life? Where you get to be great, not just getting by. I'll tell you what, if I was just getting by, I don't know if I'd stay sober. I'm sorry, I'm just not that strong. But you know what keeps me going? It's the fact that I have an opportunity to have an exceptional life. Exceptional, because there's a seed of God in me that wants to live as me, that wants to express as me, that wants to touch other people as me, that wants to heal as me. And if I let it, oh, if I could just be willing to let it, there are so many amazing things that I get to do, like standing here in front of y'all tonight. You know, I'm an Uber driver right now, but my dream, my thing that I want to do, I want to speak to people. I want to speak to as many people as possible. I want to share this message. I want to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And it may not be in an AA setting. Maybe it's just a spiritual setting. But I have something that I want to do in my life. It is what puts me on fire. If you are in this thing, and you're going through the steps, and you're not sure why, maybe think about, what are you on fire about? Is there anything that you're on fire about? Anything I was like, damn, I want to do that, man. I'm always going to be a teacher, man. I want to be a mechanic who works on fancy cars, man. I want to be a mom. I want to be the best mom I can be. I want to know that my child has every opportunity to be a healthy person that I wasn't afforded. Be on fire about that, and that fire will keep you going when you don't want to go to a meeting, when you don't want to get a sponsor, when you don't want to do the steps, when you don't want to help another alcoholic. That fire will keep you burning so you do all that shit. Because if you were just getting by, you might just get by in the program. I challenge each and every one of you. Know why you're sober. And if you don't have a reason, find a reason in yourself. Get on fire about something. And use that to fuel your sobriety. Whatever it is that you love. Maybe you were a kid and you used to like to draw pictures. And you thought to yourself, oh man, I want to be an artist one day. And it was like, I'll do that later. Guess what? Later's now! You're sober now. Later is now. Pick up that pencil. Draw again. Whatever it is you want to do. I'm so blessed, man. You know, I get to sponsor guys. And one of the greatest joys of my life today is being able to share this message of hope, this message of inspiration. So the guys that I work with have an opportunity to know that there's something greater out there. That there's something that they can do. And I share with anybody to listen to it, not necessarily just my sponsees. Anybody that will hear it, it is my obligation that I have under the contract with my God to share this with anybody. But I had to start simple. Have any of you in this room, maybe a sole resident, thought to yourself, man, this sobriety sounds good, but man, that sounds like a lot of work. I don't know if I feel like going on all that shit, man. I mean, steps. You know, steps. What do you think I can tell me? I'm trying to do steps. I got to try to work hard. Go to meetings like every day. Three times a week. I got no time for all that. I got time for all that, man. But get a tall sponsor on my shit, man. I ain't trying to do all that work. That's work, son. I'm trying to chill. I'm just chilling, man. I just want to chill, man. Let me tell you something. Every one of you are industrious, brilliant, and go-getters when it came to getting more drink and getting more dope. Man, you hustled in, didn't you? You get up, man. You get up, walk across town, rain and cold. I gotta get my dope, son. You're on the bus, I'm gonna see you. How do you look like? Ah, I got the dope. I can't break it that hole. It's like you go to a dope. You were hustling then. You were willing to work then. I tell you what. You will work. I'm going to guarantee you something right now. You will work. You're either going to work to keep getting high, or you're going to work to stay sober. You just have to ask yourself one simple question. What am I willing to work for? What am I willing to work for? Because there ain't no getting out of it. You want to work. I can't stress that enough. But if you work towards this, I guarantee you it gets better. You get to feel good. You get to have a connection with something that's greater than you. Something in your heart. Something in your very being. Something that awakens every time you look into another person's eyes. Every time you hug a person. Why do you call me Huggy Bear? Because I hug people every chance I get. I do. It's one of my missions here. I will give every single one of you a hug after this. I'm not even playing. I will hug you up. That's part of my mission. As I mentioned earlier, so many of these meetings that we'll go to, we're going to hear about like the stuff, the negative stuff. Like I said, there's so much good in all of us. And I'm going to close with this. There's a quote by Marianne Williamson. She wrote this book called A Return to Love. And the quote goes like this. It is our light, not our darkness that frightens us. Hold on, I'm going to pull it out. Hold on. Top got it. Okay, cool. All right. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people will not feel insecure around you. We were meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And as we're liberated from our own fears, our very presence automatically liberates others. Thanks for letting me share.